Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Chatting with Sherry. Today we're going to speak with author Justin Andrew Hoke. He's actually an author, he's a short fiction writer, he's a podcast personality, he's an executive producer of Dreadfully Punk, and he's a contributing writer for several different things, and he's a director. He's a very busy young man, plus he has a book series. So get your boots on and get ready. Welcome, Justin.
Hi, Sherry.
Hi, welcome to the show.
Hi.
Why don't you tell the audience a little bit about yourself and your background?
I'm based on North County, San Diego. Been out here most of my life, save for a little travel here and there for school and whatnot. But as of late, I've got the next four volumes in my steampunk novella series, Pacemaker, coming out this spring. I had originally brought out volume one a couple of years ago, and then had to send it through some tweaking, get a new editor, and now the rest of the series is ready to come out. It'll be coming out in installments of five at a time, just because they're such small books. And it's going to pick up where the first story left off, where we were in the middle of operating on a young man's heart in 1835. So it's a little crazy right now in the world of Pacemaker.
Yeah, it was a really, really interesting book. I read the first book. I thought it was really good. What gave you the inspiration for the combination of events that created the story?
Most of it's true to life. I just take a couple what-ifs and work with actual history. All the players and characters that I use in my series, save for one character, 99% of my characters are historical people that actually existed, that actually have the skill set that could accomplish those things if they would have been aware of those things. So I take my 21st century knowledge of how to build something, and then I take out all the components that would make it 21st century and try to rebuild it from scratch using only components from 1835. It's kind of like that part in Apollo 13 where they're like, we have to build this out of this. And, I take out all of the nonsense that the 21st century has provided, and I do it as basic as possible. So everything from an operating crash cart with a defibrillator to a bloodletting system to voltaic stacks.
That's really interesting. When you decided to do the heart surgery and all that, did you go by the surgeries that were available at the time and then just kind of go from there?
It would be almost 20 more years before someone actually would have cut into the pericardium of a heart back then. And the first man that did it, he did so under the radar and was shunned from the community for the longest time, because back then it wasn't exactly something to just put somebody under the knife and cut into their heart. In most cases, you didn't even mess with the heart of a cadaver back then.
Yeah. Yeah, it was illegal to do an autopsy.
Mm-hmm.
They had to do it all underground. I mean, that's been for centuries until, I think, in the 1920s or something was when they started to do things like autopsies and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't you tell the audience a little bit about what you like to do off all that work? I mean, are you a reader? Do you have like a fun sport that you like to do? You know, my a lot of writers are listening, but they want to get to know you. So,
mm-hmm.
So what do you like to do, Justin?
Well, what gets me fresh usually is a nice long drive. I mean, I like to just get lost. Hiking's good, too. I'm a swimmer, always have been. That's a great place for me to clear my head. And when in doubt, I'm on a bike of some sorts, just pedaling away. I like to get lost when I'm out adventuring, just so that way, like, any place that makes me feel comfortable enough to just collect into my own head and explore my thoughts. That's what I like to do, is try to keep try it, it's a weird way to talk about it, because I'm not outside of trying to find ways of getting my art to come out, I really don't leave the house. So if I feel that like an adventure is a must for the next part of my story, then an adventure is a must. But I've been kind of a homebody lately, like because of all the things I'm working on, being a project manager on a couple films and producing. So lately it's been a lot of people coming to me, which is great,
yeah,
because I spent the better part of the past few years going to everybody else. So it's a breath of fresh air that now people have to come to me a little bit. So
I think that's cool. That's really cool. It's funny what you said about drives. My dad used to do something on Sunday morning after breakfast, which he would make as a treat for us. He'd say, okay, everybody, pile in the car. We're going to go get lost. And that's what we did. He'd just drive off somewhere. And my mom would go, where are we going? I don't know.
No, that's the best when you don't know. You know,
yeah.
I have to watch out, though, because after years of commuting on the 5, I go on autopilot. Sometimes I'll miss my necessary exit and not make it back home for like a half an hour because I'll just zone out.
I've done that, too. I not even going very far. I remember one time I was coming home from the gym, and I was thinking about a story I was working on, and I actually drove right by the street that I live on. I was totally in my head. I'm like, when I figured out, oh my god, that's dangerous, you idiot. What kind of books do you like to read when you're just having fun for yourself?
Well, so that's a funny thing. Especially when I'm writing, I restrict myself. There's a lot of cases that, depending on what I'm writing, I won't read certain things just because I don't want to cross-contaminate what I'm writing. I'll go backwards a lot. I'll reread things that I've already read just because I don't want to, like, change my thoughts at the time, because I feel that, like, if you start reading something else and your brain might latch onto an idea, and the next thing you know, you're accidentally writing, like, you're rewriting the third book of Dune. You don't even realize it yet, you know?
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
I'll go back and I'll reread Terry Goodkind or Catherine of Sorrow. I'm a fan of Spider-Man novelizations, especially, like, from, like, the late 80s, early 90s. Like, a lot of the ladies that wrote Spider-Man novelizations. It was really funny because I fell out of Spider-Man comics early in my youth as I converted to being a DC comic book reader, but for some reason, I really liked the adaptations of Spider-Man and Iron Man, and I'll go back to those every once in a while and read those.
That is really cool. I actually like to read classics, which doesn't have anything to do with what I'm writing. But I do. I have a tendency for, like, older books, like Jane Eyre or something,
mm-hmm.
Jane Austen. Especially if right now I'm not writing anything to do with that. So, but I read a lot, and I read several different books at the same time. Are you a one book at the time guy, or three or four books that you switch off?
I'm usually a 20 book at a time person. It's kind of maddening for my fiance because she'll see that I'm only like she eats a book in like a day. So. She'll, like, at the end of every day, she'll go lie in bed and she'll nearly finish a book, and then we'll go to sleep. But I read a lot of nonfiction while I'm writing, just because I like to keep up on the extended universe quality of writing the Victorian age. So, like, right now I'm reading this nonfiction piece called To Marry an English Gentleman, right? Yeah. And it's actually written by two ladies that consulted on Downton Abbey. And
cool.
It's an amazing look into the socialite world of Victorian America. And so it's about, you know, it's essentially Victorian Mean Girls. So you really get to understand how the ladies and the countesses and you know, the women with real money in old New York, how they handled the social scene and what would it mean if you didn't get invited to so and so's party on a Monday night type of thing. And it's a very interesting look into a world that used to be, because we don't get a lot of slice of life nonfiction like this, and it's interesting to understand like how catty and just overall nasty some of these women would be. And you would think that they would be refined young women, but you know, it's 200 years of Real Housewives, and they just a different name on it. It's like the Real Housewives of steampunk.
Yeah, sociologically, people have not changed. We have not changed.
No,
women,
yeah,
and men and everybody, we're just the same as we were at the beginning of history, really.
Yeah.
I mean, other than our tools, our abilities, and things like that, technologically, we've advanced incredibly. But if you look at things and you listen, we haven't changed at all. Not at all.
Oh, yeah. No, the human
That's
human
why
animal
we still
has
fight
has
the
much
same wars.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we're still fighting the same wars. I mean, we're still having the same arguments. Yeah, we're watching Real Housewives on TV, but they've always been. I mean, it just nothing changes. It's sort of sad.
Personally, the one thing that made me sad about what did change though is that, you know, I'm reading through this book and all of these amazing parties happen like Sunday, Monday, or Tuesday. And I was like, wait a minute, but everybody does everything on the weekend now. And the more and more I read through it, it was like, oh, no, we really didn't care what day of the week it was. It was a world where if we had a party, we had to party.
Yeah. Yeah, but also you have to remember those people didn't work. They didn't even know what a weekend was. I mean, they even talked about that in Downton when Matthew first comes. And he says, well, you know, my weekends, of course, are free. And the countess says, I don't even know what a weekend is.
Yeah. What else do you mean? Days of the week. Time stands still for me.
Yes. I don't need to worry about such things as weekends.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they didn't get that. There was no reason to. I mean, you know, Matthew was a lawyer and a working man, and that's something that he did have to deal with. But, you know, most rich people, they didn't know what that meant. They went off on their vacations when they wanted to, and they jotted off to London when they felt like it. I think that's one of the reasons I enjoy watching stuff like that, because it's a world I'll never inhabit, and it's just really interesting to see what life would be like.
Mm.
Have you been watching the new season?
No, I'm actually quite behind on Downton Abbey. I haven't caught up on much. I really, like, these days I'm catching up on things that everybody else in the studio with me watches. So the only thing I actually haven't seen yet is Star Wars. I haven't seen Star Wars yet. And so,
yeah,
Oh, yeah, the crowds. Oh, yeah, for me, it was partly the crowds, and then my better half, she works so hard. So, you know, we've been trying to fit in that date night between our two schedules so we could go see it together, because we're not a house divided on Star Wars, so we don't want to, you know, one person know all the spoilers other than the other. But you know, outside of that, it's been Jessica Jones, Daredevil, a lot of that Marvel Netflix stuff. That's what everybody else on the team is watching these days. I saw The Hateful Eight, 70mm Roadshow in theaters. I thought that was interesting.
Interesting. I saw the little previews, but that's it. We're at the halfway point, so I want to give you plenty of time. Why don't you talk about your different projects and, you know, how people can, you know, find out about them, get in touch, and all that kind of thing. Why don't you start with your book and then move on to the stuff you're in production and your in your show, okay?
All right. Well, Pacemaker Volumes 1 through 5 will be out this spring. You can follow Pacemaker directly at facebook.com/Pacemaker Series. Or you can follow me directly on Twitter at Rogue031 and Dreadfully Punk at Dreadfully Punk on Twitter, or Facebook.com/Dreadfully Punk. the book itself, it's a little over 600 pages of steampunk fun in the most practical way. I don't make outrageous inventions. I just make things that I wished we could have made 200 years earlier. So it's quite a practical romp through steampunk. It's steampunk light, as I like to tell people. I don't have any ray guns or death rays. I just try to do things like inventing a pacemaker 200 years early. There is a train robbery coming up soon, though. So that'll be fun. That's towards the end of the book series.
Oh, cool.
And then I'm just trying to push the books to a point to where I can finally branch out of Pacemaker, because Pacemaker was my start into steampunk, but I want to go on to this Calamity Jane story next, and then I have a little piece on Hawaii that I'm working on right now. Beyond that, I'm currently in production on two films. One is an independent thriller film. It's a shooting title right now. It's called The Dark. They haven't settled on a final title yet, but as we advertise it, just keep your eyes peeled for anything about The Dark. We just got our locations, our director of photography, and our final shooting script. So once all this crazy rainstorm weather clears up, we'll probably go into shooting. And then after that, I'm on a Batman fan film called Suicide Run, and that follows the newest Robin in the Batman universe, Duke Thomas, as he teams up with the original Robin, now Nightwing, Dick Grayson. And it's one part hunt for the Joker, two parts, you know, two young guys just learning how to live. I got into the project because it wasn't your average comic book film idea, so there is a fair amount of karate, acrobatics, and fists of flying, but there's just as much comedy and buddy cop drama between the two Robins as there is action.
Cool.
And then after
really
all that, and then in between all that, I'm producing two shows on droidwaves.com. One is called 40s and 20s. Mike and Ryan, they're amazing, amazing pop culture aficionados, and they tear apart everything from Star Wars to Deadpool and in between. And they alternate every week opposite my show with Bethany Jordan. It's called Drunk Punk. We have a couple drinks. We talk about pop culture. We talk about what we like. We talk about what we dislike. And then we also get into political activism. That's really been my big thing recently is really just pushing people to get out there and get interested in their community. I just really feel that there's not enough people that are interested in helping take care of the world anymore. Everybody is so concentrated on themselves and what they see on the internet that they don't make time to even vote these days. I don't know if you know it, but current voter turnout is 17%. The lowest we have ever seen. There's just no explanation for it other than the fact that people have gotten lazy. And I don't care who people are voting for. I just want to see people voting, because I think it's a very important thing as Americans that we contribute to the democracy that we live in.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. People died for that right. So, yeah, absolutely. Women died for the right to vote, men, everybody, different minorities. It's ridiculous that people just take it as, oh, well, I can't do anything, so I'm not going to vote. Oh, that's not the best attitude to have. I totally agree with you. Justin?
Yes. Oh, I'm sorry.
Okay.
The phone cut out
You
a little
went
bit
silent.
there. Yeah, I know. I was like, where were we? But no, yeah, you're right, Sherry. I mean, it is a really important thing that that people recognize the importance of voting. We live in a world that is constantly changing every day. And, you know, there's been more activity on Capitol Hill in these past 4 years than we've seen in nearly 30 years of American history. There's a lot of amazing things that have changed, and there are a lot of bad things that have changed. And we as people need to take time to get out there and understand what we're voting for, what we're voting against. You know, there's a lot of cases of people that they do vote, but they just sit there and they just push the chat or, you know, mark the little dot, and then they just go, oh, yeah, that sounds good. So an uninformed voter is just as dangerous as someone who's not voting.
That's true.
More dangerous.
I completely agree with that. do you have any events? I know you're going to Condor. Why don't you tell about all the different things you're doing? People can get in touch with you and meet you and all that stuff.
Yeah. Well, outside of Condor Con coming up, in 2 weeks, I'll be at Casa Sam. It's a new cosplay convention down here in San Diego, and I'll be moderating the main stage panels all weekend, and then hosting an episode of Drunk Punk in the sushi bar. And then after that, Condor Con, and then we have Clockwork Alchemy. That's a great steampunk convention up in San Jose Memorial Day weekend, and I'll be out there for all of Clockwork Alchemy and Fanime, the attached fandom convention that coincides with it. So I'll be out there for 4 days of one of the coolest conventions that falls on a holiday weekend. But 4 days in San Jose, and I'll be out there promoting my book and the release of a new anthology that I'm in called 30 Days Later. And all the proceeds from that go to promote literacy in our youth. And outside of that, I've got my own event coming up at the Vista Gas and Steam Engine Museum April 1st through the 3rd this year. It's called the Festival of Fools. And not only will it be featuring some steampunk artists, but it'll also be focusing on community art, youth art, and senior art. We have a very vibrant and active arts community here in North County, San Diego. And I feel that there's just not enough to put it on display. So I figured I'd throw my hat in the ring and try to get some of our amazing artists in North County out and on display.
Cool. And where is that going to be located?
That'll be at the Vista Gas and Steam Engine Museum in North County, San Diego.
All right. And do you have any book signings other than the conventions?
No. I will be just at the conventions in the meantime. The movie production schedule has kind of kept me really busy. I don't think I'll be seeing any bookstore stuff until this summer. So I'm working on that, but producer comes first before author. So that's the sad part of my life is I have all this fun time writing new scripts and writing new books, but a lot of what's delayed my process has become taking on the mantle of producer. And it's been really good for me. You know, I'm not disappointed that it's taken me a little longer to get on my books because it's given me a time to make good friends, make amazing connections, and just get out there more because, frankly, I don't leave my house enough.
Yeah, I know how that feels. I have two questions. One is on how do you balance between all that stuff, your production and your working and all that, with your personal life, with your family and your fiance and things like that?
My family's kind of small on my side, so we're kind of like far from each other, so we're like a checking every mile type of people. But as far as like my home life with my fiance Lindsay, she's my rock. She's my center. She keeps me on track. She's there every once in a while to, you know, nudge me and go, oh, no, can't be slowing down. You wouldn't like this. You're on to the next thing. So she helps put some pep in my step when I need it. Her family is very supportive because we live very close to them. So I get to see them for all of the major family holidays. But we make just enough time for each other and just enough time for our families. I find that it's, at the end of the day, it's really just not enough time for just the two of us between that, all the amazing work that she does, and then just how batty my schedule can be. So a lot of the days we're just thankful that we could sit down on the couch and just hold hands and watch like old Law and Order together. But yeah, we're already at the old couple point right there.
Oh gosh, and they're young, believe me. And do you have, what's your, I know you do a lot of stuff, but what is your great passion in life?
Well, my biggest passion is really just spreading knowledge in general. I think that, I mean, right now I'd have to say that my biggest passion is political activism. There's a lot of things that just people aren't paying attention to that they could be for the sake of our own futures. You know, and not just presidents, but, you know, statutes and laws. You know, I was so glad to, you know, to hear about, you know, legalized marriage, but then at the same aspect, you hear about other things. Like my big thing that I'm fighting for right now is the 30 meter telescope at Mauna Kea. There's a lot of people that are against it, and a lot of people that are claiming that it's against the religious wants and beliefs of the Hawaiian people. And as someone who happens to be nearly half Hawaiian, it's to me and my family, the way that we've always seen it is that, yes, there's a great, rich history of gods and pagan ideals, but we also look towards the stars, and we contributed towards the science of the community. So this telescope, I believe, would be a great step forward for my people, yet it's quite a few that that don't think it's so cool.
That doesn't, well, I'm coming from a different point of view, but that doesn't make any sense to me. I don't understand why the people would be against a telescope. All it's doing
they feel that it's building on the land of the gods. Essentially, that zone is like Hawaii's Mount Olympus, and then they feel that you know, it would cheapen the land by putting something like that on it. But the Hawaiian people have gone through a lot in the past 100 years. I mean, being a race that was forced into silence, and then, you know, and then forced into, you know, multiple forms of Christianity, and then out of its own pagan religion, and then wanting to go back to it, even though it really didn't have any guidelines for it. So it's, you know, it's a long and arduous trail for the Hawaiian people to come back to where they were 100 years ago.
Interesting. Well, I wish you luck on that trek. Well, because I love astronomy. I mean, that's like, how can you not just want to see the stars as clear and as many as you can, mm-hmm. and different mm-hmm. things? It's the most beautiful thing ever, to look at that and the deep part of the ocean are the two deepest, most beautiful and mysterious things in the world. Mm-hmm. So I wish you a lot of luck. I hope it works out and that you get that telescope there. That's a beautiful thing.
I think so. I think so very much.
Well, we've come to the end. I want to thank you very much for being on the show, Justin. I hope you enjoyed it.
Oh, I did. It's been fun.
Thank you. Thank you. And thank you for chatting with Sherry.